Welcome to the Leadership Experience Podcast, where we seek to build connections, talk relevant issues about warfighting, and share professional knowledge through experience and lessons learned with guests from a variety of different professional backgrounds. It's our way to relate to multiple generations within our formation and create real conversations as we build a team of teams committed to winning and dedicated to the pursuit of excellence. We hope you enjoy our content. You can continue to find the Lancer Brigade on Facebook and Instagram, and find our podcast content on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts as you search for the Lancer Brigade or the Leadership Experience. Enjoy. Hey team, check it out. Today we welcome Mr. Eric LeGrand. Nearly 10 years ago, Eric was a star defensive tackle for Rutgers University when his athletic career came to an abrupt halt after he sustained a severe spinal cord injury following a tackle. Though Eric was paralyzed from the neck down, he did not let his injuries define him. Instead, Eric has worked through adversity and has made substantial progress through physical therapy. His contributions today will cover both his journey of recovery and his efforts he's now taking to empower others both on and off the field. Hey, Eric, it's great to meet you. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with our team and have a conversation today.
I appreciate you guys having me. It means a lot.
Well, you know, I wanted to start off by just, you know, for the team that aren't familiar with you and your story, I know you're incredibly busy, especially during the time of COVID. I wanted to give you a shout out and congrats. I understand that you almost raised about $200,000 for this A Walk to Believe 5K.
Yeah, that was a whole crazy situation. So the backstory of that, you know, this was my 10th annual Walk to Believe that we have every year on Bush campus at Rutgers in Piscataway. It's always takes place in the stadium, like with the opening ceremonies, then walking a 5K around the campus. You know, we call it walk, run, and roll. We have all, you know, all types of people, all different abilities out there. And this year was my 10th annual one, so, you know, we wanted to make it big. We were going to make it in the evening time. We were going to have a glow stick, like glow stick night run and walk and all this stuff, fireworks afterwards. But COVID came, and, yeah, we had to pivot, but we decided to come up with a challenge called 52 for 52. My number is 52. And there's 50 states in the two U.S. territories. We said, you know, why don't we get them involved with this somehow? And we're like, they want to get up. And they said, let's try to get a participant from every part of the country, the two U.S. territories. I'm like, okay, we got 6 weeks to do this. I don't know if we can, but let's try. And I put it out there. And proud to say, a week and a half later, we filled the entire map. And we also had 10 countries participate in the 10th annual virtual Walk to Believe, and it raised $190,000 for Team LeGrand and the Christopher and Nana Reeve Foundation.
That's an incredible story when you're talking this 52 for 52. I just need to get some days I just want to see 52 guys out here doing PT. So what you were able to do, you know, in this challenge and pivot off of COVID is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was. You know, to get 1,500 people to participate in this event, you know, you never know how it's going to go. You know, sometimes it's tough. People are going through tough times. You know, what's on their mind, what, you know, what they're doing, if they had the funds. You know, it's a $20-$25, you know, investment, but people were filling up with their whole families just wanting to do it for a great cause. And that's why I'm just so inspired by it, because with everything that's going on in the world with social injustice, I love to show how when we work together, what we can truly do and how remarkable it really is.
That's an awesome cause and a purpose that you have laid out there. And, you know, you gave us a little bit of an idea that you mentioned, you know, the 10-year anniversary is what you were going through. So I was wondering for the team that's maybe not familiar with your story, maybe we just kind of shape it a little bit. And when people ask, you know, who Eric LeGrand is, you know, what would your friends say? What would your family say? You know, who this individual is and why he's such an impressive, you know, young man and the things that he's doing, especially after the events that occurred in October 2010.
Yeah, you know, as my friends from home and my family, they'll say, you know, life of the party, leader, wanted to help people, but also a little bit of a goofball, a jokester. Loves to have a good time, but all in all, just a good person who has a great heart and loves to be around. And then people who are kind of learning about my story and following me through my journey since my injury, they usually say inspiration, motivator, you know, a role model, people we can look up to, things of that type of sort. So it's pretty cool to hear from both sides.
Yeah, I don't think that if people actually watched, and I know you've been featured on ESPN, and you speak with a lot of different organizations, and the amount of time that you're willing to give back and pay forward is incredibly awesome to see. And as I would lay out, and I was learning a little bit about you, just this positivity that you, everywhere you go, you're inspired to talk to people. Where does that come from? Where does that resiliency and that ability to constantly want to inspire and help people?
I've always been that person that likes to make people happy. It'll be the, like I said, life, the party, but bring people up. I don't like to bring people down, put them down, make them feel bad about themselves, you know, in a manner where it's going to hurt them. Obviously, if you're leading them and doing, going through certain drills, sometimes you have to, you know, knock somebody down and bring them up. But I was always that type of, you would say the jock of the school, but never the one that jocked that was pushing people into lockers and knocking books out of people's hands, like to make somebody feel bad. If I was going to knock your books out of your hands, it had to be somebody I knew, my friend, and then I'll be the guy on the ground helping picking up the papers. Like, that's who I was, just to, you know, I was always been like that. And I would say I played sports. You know, you go through so much adversity, so much time that's put into it and invested into it for only a few opportunities to play a game for 60 minutes. It kind of makes you look back at it like, you know, I put all this time into it. I get to only play for a certain amount of time. You know, you kind of build up that tolerance of, you know, I'm here for the long run. I can overcome. I can, you know, be able to see stuff thrown my way and learn how to pivot, learn how to handle that adversity. Adversity makes us a lot. It makes or breaks people. A lot of time people run away from it.
You're sharing some incredible wisdom. And what I would offer is, you know, for a lot of people that are kind of going through their own challenges, what would you offer to them right now is if they're facing some adverse situation, whether it's a challenging relationship, whether they went through the first shortcoming or failing, you know, that they've ever had in their life, what's the reason that they should get back up and take that first step forward?
Finding that sense of purpose, you know, what they're looking to get out of it. Sometimes that purpose may not be what they think that they should, like, if it's a relationship, well, I want to stay with her. I want to stay with him. I want this to work, but maybe it's not supposed to work. You know, being able to take a step back, evaluate the whole situation on what's going on, then formulating that plan off of that, and then going out there and actually executing the plan. A lot of times the last two things people aren't able to do, they're not able to formulate and then execute a plan. They fall back and then they try to look at the situation. Then they come up with a bunch of excuses on why this and why that didn't happen, instead of formulating a plan and trying to make it happen.
You know, what you just explained is something very similar to what we had a previous guest, Mr. Ray Dalio, and he described that same thing, and he echoes that in his book, and he shares that, you know, through his own personal, you know, challenges that he had and his own crucible moments where he ended up losing a lot in his own personal business and how to build this, you know, the experience of getting back after being an investor, you know, a little bit of a day at a time and kind of earning everything back. But most importantly, it was the relationships that he had to make sure it was the individuals and the people on the journey that he was with. And I see just in what you're talking about, you know, this inspiration and this drive and not, you know, shying away from the challenges that life presents you. Where did you get that from? Would you get that from your mom, your dad, from somebody that inspired you? And I know you talked a little bit about sports, but how important was football as part of that process? But really, what did you learn from the home, from your parents?
You know, I'll tell you from one thing my mom taught me when I was a kid. I'll take you to this story. So when I was 10 years old, I was playing Pop Warner football for my local town, Port Reading Saints. And I had the same routine every day in the fall. I'll go to school, come home, you know, hurry up, do my homework, rush out to play with my friends in the park. My mom would get out of work around 5 o'clock, come pick me up. I'll go home, get dressed up, and make it to practice by 6. That was my routine every day. One day, I'm not going to lie, I was feeling myself. I knew I was the best player on the team. I'm like, you know what? I'm not showing up to practice today. I'm just going to show up for game day. went to school, came home, went to the did my homework, ran to the park, started playing. I'm okay to the park. Eric, it's time to go. I said, hey, Mom, I'm not going to practice today. I'm just going to show up for the game on Saturday. Let's just say that didn't go over too well for me. My mom came in the park, grabbed me by my arm, embarrassed me in front of all my friends, dragged me over to the car, threw my big, I was big too, threw my big behind in the car. And on the way home, she said, I don't know who you think you are. Just because you're the best one on the team, you don't have to show up for practice. When you commit to something, you see it through. I don't care how good the team is doing or how bad the team is doing. You said that you're going to be there. You're going to be there each and every day. And here I am at 10 years old. Like, oh, my God. But here I am 20 years later at 30. And that lesson has just stuck with me with everything that I do. When you commit to something, you see it through.
That's awesome. We all have stories like that with our moms and dads, and make sure we understand. I think for my mom, she was more the disciplinarian in my house, and she was also a little bit of OCD and a neat freak. So, at our house, in my room, I used to have these like containers, and we would have them all labeled out, right? Like He-Man, Legos, and Star Wars. And she would come in with kind of a surprise inspection. She'd open them up, and when she'd find some, Legos with the Star Wars or He-Man, she's like, this is not how I showed you that you're supposed to put this stuff away. And she would take all of this and dump it in the middle of the floor. And we would all like spending the rest of the time picking up all this stuff and sorting it, and going back. So it's good though.
Those little things. It's those little life lessons like that when you're as a kid makes you mad as all hell, but you see what it carries on to.
That's right. It's funny because, I thought I was going to be able to trick her, because really what she was teaching me was attention to detail, in the smallest little things. It didn't matter what the task was. It was important, kind of like how your mom was teaching you about this work ethic and practice and being a good teammate. So when my mom had piled all the stuff in the middle of my room, I was like, you know what? I'm going to teach her a lesson. I said, so she was also like a hoarder. She used to teach, like, keep every empty shoebox that we ever had for a pair of shoes we would get. So we would always have these empty shoeboxes in my closet. And so I convinced my younger brother we would package all these things up, and we taped them all up, and we wrote, don't open until 1993. And we stuck them all back up in the closet, and then we went to scout camp. And then she came to pick us up a week later, and you should have seen the look on her face. It was priceless. She didn't say anything, and then we walked up, and she goes, you guys know exactly what you need to do. And I'm like, you weren't supposed to open that till 1993. So, yeah.
That's amazing. That's hilarious. Oh, man, that's stories like that, but the attention to detail. When I got to Rutgers, I'll tell you what, Coach Chiano, when it came to attention to detail, that is what he is all about. And that'll change my life in the way I look at it. And again, it's built a little OCD in me, believe me, because now, even with my mom and stuff, when things are out of place, I'm like, nah. Then I got to realize, it's kind of a funny story, when I first got hurt, I told my mom, I'm like, you could never play for Rutgers football. Your attention to detail is there. She looked at me, she goes, well, I know I can't play for Rutgers football. I was like, well, that didn't go over the way I wanted it to.
That's awesome. Yeah, you mentioned Coach Chiano, and I know he's got this phrase about keep chopping. And, I was wondering if you could just share with the team, what's the relationship and how important is that individual? One, having a coach like him, and then what he did for you. And then I know we're going to get to the point of the beginning of the journey, but just so everybody kind of knows who these key players are before we start from the beginning, what does Coach Chiano mean to you?
Well, Chiano is an awesome father figure, leader, role model, does things the right way by the book, takes 17, 18-year-old kids and turns them into 21, 22-year-old men. It's not always easy. It's not always fun. People said it's kind of like being in the military, the training going on, the stuff with Coach Chiano. It's pretty crazy, pretty wild, outlandish stuff. But at the end of the day, he has the best interest for you, and he has your back end. When he was recruiting me, he told me he treats all his players like they're his kids, than we're his sons. And there was no better example of that when, after I got injured, all the things that he did for me, and continue to be that, leader, father figure in my life.
Yeah, we all need a Coach Yano in our lives, and for the team that's listening. A lot of times, you know, that's the team leader, that's a squad leader, and I always kind of share that, you know, a lot of times those leaders are going to be the ones that provide you and give you the love that you don't necessarily want, but it's the love that you need, you know, and we see that, and I know when you start to share your story, you're going to talk about how impactful his leadership and when it really got to the crucible moment in your life. What he really did for you and your family.
Yeah, you know, he was just tremendous. And the thing was, he continued his relationship after he left Rutgers with me and, you know, drafted me down to Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2012. And as he went on along the Ohio State, just always staying in touch with my mom and myself and checking in, making sure that we were all good and being a part of just my events. He's been great, and it's great to have him back now.
Well, that's awesome. So let's step back in the time machine. So, you know, for everybody that's listening, we've been talking about 10-year anniversary. We've talked about a lot of the great things you've done, you know, during these times and the mitigation you had to go through COVID. And I know you grew up with a great support network. We've talked a little bit about Coach Ciano, but take us back to October 2010. You know, I know you're a star football player and a defensive tackle. We've already talked about, you know, the magic number 52 is on the field, and you're playing my old alma mater, you know, up at West Point. Can you share with the team what you remember on that day, and then the events leading up to currently what are currently you're doing now?
You know, it all started in that game where we had just tied it up 17-17 in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes left in the game. On the kickoff team, in my mind, I'm like, get down the field, make a tackle, you know, get them in bad field position. We'll get a quick three and out and get the offensive ball and go win the game on a 2-minute drill. That particular game, I was facing a double team, which means as soon as the ball was kicked off, two guys came to block me. But on that specific kickoff, I was able to get right through my split the double team, and I stacked them behind me. So I'm running down the field saying, you know, this is going to be a big hit. Like, I got a good head start on this guy. I got the guys behind me. It's going to be a big hit. How do I want to make this tackle? No one has ever played football before. As you see what you hit, you keep your head up and you make a tackle. I say, you know what? This is going to be a big collision. Let me just keep my head out of this tackle. Let me use my shoulder. Running down the field, I go to make this tackle. My teammate got down there about a half a second before I did. And he dove at his legs and he tripped Malcolm Brown up. Malcolm Brown twirled in the air. I put my head down thinking it wasn't going to be a tackle at all. And then next thing you know, the crown on my head goes right into the back of his shoulder blade and boom. My teammates come running over to me and they're like, ooh, let's go. And I remember just being able to really shake my head like this. The last thing I felt was my heels hitting the ground. And then I'm waving to the trainers. Trainers get over to me, they're like, Eric, is it your head or your neck? And I said, I can't breathe. From there, like, can you feel this? Can you feel that? And I'm like, I can't breathe. Now Coach Ciano comes out, he looks down at me, he goes, Eric, you have to pray. And honestly, when he said that to me, I'm like, I can't move, I can't breathe. My coach is telling me I have to pray. This is it. And at one point, I closed my eyes. And I said, God, take me at ease. As nothing happened, I started praying, God, please give me a gas of air or something. At this time, they had brought the cart out. They put me onto the cart. And they lifted me up onto the car, and I caught a gasp of air for a second. So I said, okay, I knocked the wind out of myself because that's exactly what it felt like. Went to go give a thumbs up to the crowd to let everyone know I was going to be okay. And nothing happened. It felt like there was 1,000 pounds cinder block laying on my hand. They bring me to the ambulance. They put an oxygen mask on me. I'm ignorant to the fact of what an oxygen mask actually does for you. I'm thinking once they put this on, I'll be able to go. I wasn't able to do that. I inhaled. I wasn't able to exhale. I freaked out so much and I blacked out. And I was on my way to the hospital.
When you got to the hospital, and I know that you got the news of the extent of your injury, what did they tell you?
Well, it actually came from my mom weeks later. They had, you know, after they did the MRIs and CAT scans and everything, they took my mom into a room with my old teammate and his mother. And they said, your son has fractured his C3, C4 vertebrae. He'll be paralyzed from the neck down for the rest of his life. He'll never walk again, never eat on his own, never have solid food, never be able to come off this ventilator, and we're hoping he's strong enough to make it through the surgery. So one doctor told her, and then after that, he walked out. The doctor starts giving her all these different percentages and this and that, but at that time, my mom was checked out. She didn't want to hear anything. They let me see her before the surgery, and I kind of remember this, and I kind of don't. But I guess the adrenaline was still flowing from the game. And she said, the first three words I said to her before I was getting prepped for surgery, before I was going in, she said, I looked up at her and goes, I'll be back. And she said, when I said that to her, she was like, you know what? If he's fighting now, we have to fight for him. And whoever sees him from here on out has to have a positive attitude. Do not let him see you upset. And that's what happened. And it jump-started everything.
That's awesome. You know, and as I did some research and some reading on you, you know, this happened in October, and you were placed on a ventilator after the surgery. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know if you can see the scar, but it's under there. But, I mean, I was on a ventilator for 5 weeks. And let's just say that thing is uncomfortable. It's not fun. It makes you feel dependent on it. But I was able to come off that ventilator 5 weeks after my injury, after they told me I would be on it for the rest of my life.
And as I read that you were the one telling the doctors, hey, I want to come off this ventilator. Just that challenge in itself. What was your parents thinking and what were the docs thinking when they were telling you that?
Well, you know, they were like, hey, of course, my mom's like, are you sure? You're sure? Like, are you kidding? Like, I'm like, Ma, I got to get this. I can't sleep with this thing because of that noise. It's just like, shh. I'm like, this, and then this is uncomfortable. It's like wrapped around your neck. So I'm like, I remember I was talking to my respiratory therapist one night. I'm like, hey, you think you could take me off the ventilator for a few minutes? She goes, if I do, I'm going to have to put your arm back on in like a minute. I'm like, perfect. Give me that 1 minute to fall asleep. So they took me off, and I'm not going to lie, I felt like I just got done running a New York City marathon. And I was like, gasping for air, but somehow I was breathing on my own. And the respiratory therapist was like, okay, let's go a little bit longer. And an hour and a half later, I was still breathing on my own, but I was, you know, getting exhausted. So she put me back on, but she said, okay, maybe you are ready to wean off of this. And then the next day was a little bit longer, and then the next day a little bit longer, until finally I was fully, you know, I wasn't fully vent dependent anymore, and I was able to breathe on my own 5 weeks after my injury. And wow, talk about a blessing from God and just sheer will and determination, because when you first come off of that ventilator, it's in a, like trying to catch a gasp of air, but it sounds just like, it's crazy how the way it sounds. So, yeah, being put in those moments, man, it's like your back is against the wall, and the only way to do is fight out of that corner.
So right off the bat, you're defying the odds, and you're showing everybody that you have this fighting spirit, even when the medical professionals are saying, you know, that you're going to be on a ventilator for the rest of your life. And so I could tell that every time that you were taking a step, and just as you were talking and telling the story, you know, more and more people that are surrounding you, just like your mom said, you know, it almost inspires them, you know, to continue to want to do something more challenging. If you're seeing this individual that's just doing the reps so he can breathe on their own. What was the extent of the paralysis that they told you initially?
Yeah, it's like they said all the things I had mentioned to you. So I had to get transferred after I left the hospital, Hackensack. I got transferred over to Kessler Institute. And, you know, I was this big football player, and I remember going into the therapy room, and everyone had known me as now the Rutgers football player because my story was in the media. So I would get to the gym, and everyone would be going through their motions, doing their thing, and as soon as I came through, it's like the record stopped playing, and everyone was just like, all eyes on me. It just stared at me until I got to the back of the room, and no one would say nothing to me. They would just watch me go to the back, and finally, for 2 weeks, this went on. And I just used to, you know what, grind mode, football mode, let me just work. I'm just block out all the noise around me. This is working. The first exercise they had me do They put a pillow on my stomach. I'm sorry, not a pillow, a balloon on my stomach. And they tell me, okay, lift the balloon off the stomach and lift it down. I'm like, wait, what? They're like, you want to come off of that ventilator? Because at that time, I wasn't off of it fully yet. They had me, I went from benching 415 pounds, squatting 605 pounds, and power cleaning 363 pounds, and now blowing a balloon off of my stomach, trying to hold it. Let me tell you, that was the hardest exercise I've ever did in my life. And me and trying to hold that balloon, just and then like, inhale, exhale. Ridiculous. I felt like I was going to die on that mat doing it. But yeah, that's how it got started.
Well, that's great. And every time that now, you know, I know that you have more and more determination to do more. And you've talked about how you've got this desire to continue to go back and do everything you need to do to get back out of that chair and get back on the field.
Yeah, you know, I've whatever I can control, I'm going to control. I would love to. People ask me, like, if you could play football again, would you go do that? I said, if I could be in the same shape I was when I was 20 years old, you best believe I'll be right back out there on that football field again. But it's just the sheer determination now to shift my focus from being that football player to now my life and everything that I do, attacking it with the same mentality, the same mindset as that athlete that I did when I was a college football player. You know, like you said, the attention to details, making sure I'm prepared for situations, making sure I have a plan and executing a plan, building a team around me, leading that team. It's all the stuff that I learned as an athlete now that I put into my life and business in general.
That's great. And I know we've already talked a little bit about Coach Schiano, but I know when he was going through and you were going through your recovery, I read that he spent a lot of time in your room. You know, while you were there, you know, as you're falling asleep, when your parents are there, what does that mean? You know, and for the team, you know, a lot of times we have soldiers that get injured. We spend a lot of time with them. And whether it's physically or mentally, what does that mean, you know, as somebody that's going through that process, to have a leader and a coach like that that's helping to kind of shepherd you through the entire process?
No, man, it's just huge. It just made me gain. I already had so much respect for him, but even more because – I call that time of my life the terrors of the night. Like all day long, I was with my family and friends visiting. But meanwhile, I'm still stuck to a bed with tubes coming out of me every which way. But I was around people that I knew. My mom had been up for 3 days straight, and it was finally time for her to get some rest. Like there was a hotel next to the hospital. So my mom, my aunt, and sister would stay at the hotel. So they would have to leave the hospital around 11 o'clock. Finally, they got her to leave after, like, you need to go get some rest with my aunt and my sister. Coach Schiano said, every night I'll come up here and I'll sit with him just to make him feel comfortable enough until, you know, as time goes along. And he did that he would have practice he'll be up at the Hale Center, which was our football facility, at 6 a.m., do a whole full day of meetings, practice, recruiting, all that stuff. And then he would meet my mom every night at 11 o'clock at night, 11 p.m. at the hospital, whether if he was flown by his helicopter or he had a police escort with his, you know, with some of his staff. He was there every night, you know, for a solid 2 weeks to meet my mom at 11 o'clock and sit in my room and break down the film, talk to me, whatever it was. And I could just try to get some sleep and relax and be comfortable. It's just what he did. He would stay about till 2 p.m. in the morning, 2 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, wow. And so for the team that's not tracking, when he ended up going down to Tampa Bay and you were talking about, you know, drafting you, what was that about?
That was amazing. You know, my draft class year would have been in 2012, and you know, it's something that you work your butt off to get there, but unfortunately this injury happened to me right in the middle of my junior year. So he got the job with the Buccaneers, and one of the first things he did, you know, in the offseason was saying, hey, I want to sign Eric LeGrand to, you know, a free agency contract and make him our 90th man on the roster, right? True to his word, you know, he did tell me that. He called me up on May 2nd of 2012, and just was giving me going to talk about school, this and that, life and all that. And then he goes, Eric, you know, I want to sign you to the 90th man on our roster. We want to sign you to an NFL contract. And get you down here, be a part of the team. The team needs to meet you, be a part of it, and you know, we want you to be a part of this. And I was just like, oh my God, like, this is crazy. Like, you're making my dream come true. Even though I never played it down in the NFL, I can say I signed an NFL contract after retiring from the NFL and all of that. So I can't thank him enough. And over the 2 years that span that he was there, I went down there, I think, 10 times. So it's pretty cool.
Wow. And now is he back at Rutgers?
He's back at Rutgers. We're 1-0 right now, looking hopefully to be 2-0 versus Indiana on a Saturday. But, yeah, he's back at Rutgers, and it's just good to have him just 20 minutes down the road from me.
It's amazing. And, you know, for the team that's listening, a lot of times, you know, you talk about you've probably seen him in so many different lights, you know, from the time where he was recruiting you from high school, putting you through some probably pretty intense workouts when you weren't running and executing and you didn't do the prep right. You know, he's probably giving you the business a little bit. And then the moment that, you know, just as you described where he told you to pray after the tackle happened, and then the moment through recovery and then being there with your family and wrapping your arms around. I mean, you've gotten to see him not just as a leader and a coach, but really as a mentor, lifelong friend. And just, you know, it's pretty impressive, you know, to hear you talk about that relationship. And I think that a lot, as you mentioned in the very beginning, you know, takes young 18-year-olds and turn them into men at 21, 22. And that's something that I think is very similar that we would expect of our team leaders and squad leaders, you know, that end up seeing some brand new soldiers that come into the Army, and it's a completely different life.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny that you say that, because recently I heard him in an interview where somebody asked him about his relationship with myself. And it's funny, he goes, you know, he's not that 18-year-old, you know, boy anymore. I now look to him as a friend. So I talk to him and I relate to him a lot differently now. And I was just like, wow, that's true. But when I was back in 18, it was different. And a funny story that actually made me realize that, wow, he does have another side besides coach, was when I was injured. This is up at Kessler. This is probably about a month into my injury. He came up to visit me, and my little nephew at the time was only 16 months a year. It's crazy to think now that he's 11, but he was 16 months at the time. And I remember coach getting on the floor. And he starts poking his belly. He goes, "Goo goo goo goo, ga 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 ga." I'm like, "Oh hell, what? That is not the coach that I know. The coach that is screaming at me, yelling and breaking me down at all times of ways to goo 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 goo, ga 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 ga." I'm like, "So where's the rest of my team? I wish you could see this right now." But it showed another side of him that I never got to see before until that moment, and then afterwards.
That's awesome. That's like that's what we call a benevolent dictator.
It was insane. Like, I, if you would have seen my face, I was just like, "No way, no way. That's not the man that I know. No, there's no one, none of that goo goo gaga in the man that I know."
That's incredible. Just to hear your story about that relationship, going from a high school recruit, you know, getting drafted, and then now being a lifelong friend. Not many people have a special relationship like that. And so I know as you were coming out of the hospital and you started to, you know, work through your recovery, what were you thinking that now your new calling and your new purpose was going to be?
You know, I got to see the outside life. I guess you probably understand this as well as I do. When you're trapped and you're in the zone and you're going through this, you know, through your grind and through your training, there is no outside life. This is my life. You know, Rutgers football was my life. School, football, weight room, study hall, tiny, tiny, tiny social life. That's what I knew. That's it. After I got hurt, I'm like, there is a world that exists outside of Rutgers football. There are people that come from all different walks of life, all different types of injuries from different, you know, different ways. There's things that are actually happening outside of just Rutgers football. So I got to hear some of these stories, and, you know, some fortunate, some very unfortunate. And it kind of put me in my role. Like, all these, like, my story was so national. So now people are starting to do research and understand what spinal cord injuries do for you. And Christopher Reeve was the original Superman that I didn't even know back in, because I was born in 1990. But he unfortunately passed away in, I believe, around like 2005 and or 2003, 2004, one of the 2000, right around that area. And I feel like when I got hurt in 2010, the torch was now passed on to me to finish his goal, and that's a world of empty wheelchairs. And that's bringing awareness to the cause, raising funds, creating foundations, bringing people together around the cause. And that's what I tried to do. I feel like that's my purpose. And just being able to help people get through adverse times. It doesn't have to be a spinal cord injury. People are going through all types of stuff, and I feel like they reach out to me a lot because they know I can help guide them along their way.
That's awesome. And I know that Team LeGrand and the Eric LeGrand Patriot Saint Foundation, I mean, the things that you've done and the money that you've raised for the awareness, I mean, millions of dollars now. It's just incredible. And some of the accolades that I did some research about, I mean, the Jimmy V Award for Perseverance, you know, the Unsung Hero Award, being identified as one of the most influential or the most influential, you know, person in New Jersey. When you hear all those things, and it's no longer the accomplishments that you anticipated were going to be on the football field, what do you think now?
I feel like I was put here for a reason. This is my reasoning. People that watch football may have known me if I was blessed enough to make it to the NFL and be able to play in the NFL, and the NFL community would know me. But so many people have told me now that I've never watched a down of football in my life, but your story resonates with me so much, and I love hearing you. So I feel like now I really am covering the masses with my story. It's a story of resilience. It's a story of adversity. A story of overcoming, a story of believing, and just so showing people that when things knock you down, you don't have to stay down. You know, when you look at situations, no matter how bad you are, someone always has it worse than you. No matter what, no matter what moment you're going through in your life and you're dealing with this, no matter how bad your situation may be, someone always has it worse.
That's a tremendous perspective to have. You know, and it's that positive outlook that when you're surrounding yourself with those type of individuals and you see somebody, you know, that's constantly trying to inspire you to get to see the positive things that you have, you know, there's no reason not to challenge that. So for our leaders that are challenged with some type of, you know, some difficulty in their life, it may be a relationship, it may be the next, you know, opportunity to do an expert badge, and there's a little bit of hesitation, what advice would you offer for them?
Don't be afraid of being comfortable being uncomfortable. You're going to be put in uncomfortable situations in your life. You got to literally take that leap of faith and try it. And sometimes you may fail. It may not be a home run right off the bat, but it's about going through the process where you truly learn about yourself through failure and through success. When you fail, you learn how to not make the same mistakes that you made last time. You remember that feeling of how bad it felt. You don't want to experience that anymore. When you succeed, you remember how good it felt, that gratifying feeling of actually overcoming something or working so hard towards something and getting that rewarding feeling that you want more and more of it. And then you create like this, like, I don't know, platform in your head of things. Okay, when this happens, I can do this. When that happens, I know how to do this. When this happens, I could do that. You know what I mean? And it just becomes natural to you. Trained behavior becomes instinct. It just becomes your instinct.
You know, it's incredible to hear as you're telling your story and you talk about the importance of Coach Schiano, and you really, as you pay it forward, it's all the things that he did for you, and now you're the Coach Schiano for so many other people. How important is it, you know, once to, number one, find your own Coach Schiano, and then the second thing is to be that individual for somebody that like you had and pay it forward?
Well, I guess, you know, I live my life by a definition that was embedded in our head at Rutgers by Coach Schiano, and it's a definition of success. And it's the peace of mind you get knowing you did everything you could to be the best you can be. I'll say it one more time. It's the peace of mind you get knowing you did everything you could to be the best you can be. You're the only one that can tell yourself, and then when you look at yourself in that mirror at night, I gave it my all today. There was nothing left that I can give. Or I didn't give it my all today. I could have went a little bit further, But when you lay your head down on that pillow at night, if you did, you should be able to sleep at ease. And if not, might be a little bit restless. But if you blessed with the opportunity to wake up that next day, look yourself in the mirror that morning, you can go tell yourself, I'm going to be the best that I can be today, and hold yourself accountable to that. And that's how I look at it.
That's an incredible gem. So what's next? What's the next challenge for Eric LeGrand?
I want to say it's a challenge, but I'm embarking in my entrepreneurship side of the world now, besides, you know, my foundation and motivational speaking and sports broadcasting. And proud to say that during quarantine, it's allowed me to actually sit back and reflect and look at different opportunities, different sources of income, because a lot of stuff had been taken away. You know, we're not gathering and having events and doing things like that anymore. So had to find another way to pivot, and started listening to audio books, and book that changed my life was Shoe Dog from Phil Knight, and how he created Nike, which was absolutely incredible. But I'm proud to say that I just started drinking coffee in August, but came up with the idea in July, and I'm opening up a coffee shop in my hometown of Woodbridge, New Jersey, next summer. And I plan on going online with it in the January, February of next year when they announce the building of the place. So I'm excited. Never even drank a cup of coffee until August of this year. Now I said, what the heck have I been missing out on? But yes, now I'm doing as much. I'm educating myself. I formulated my plan, built a team around me. Now it's time to execute. But yes, wow, I've been missing out on some great stuff for the first 29 years of my life. And now I'm going to say I turned 30 and I started drinking coffee.
Well, if that's your slight way of asking to get an invitation out here in the Pacific Northwest, we drink a little coffee up here.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, my coffee advisor is actually from Portland, Oregon. So I know in the Northwest, you guys are big coffee aficionados out there. So don't worry. Once we get up and launching, I'm gonna have to send some of your guys way. And you're like, oh, let me know what you think.
Definitely. And if you ever make a trip up here, it'd be great to see you. And I'm sure you can't throw a stone without hitting some type of coffee shop, you know, or hit a Starbucks. And so you could go around and you could compare.
I'm about to say, no, I need to do my investigation. All right, who's got the best coffee in this area now? I'm taught to compete anyway, so I'm like, all right, who's challenging me?
That's great. Well, hey, I really appreciate, you know, this is an incredible story. You know, we talk a lot about grit and resiliency, you know, for our team. And, you know, Angela Duckworth wrote that book. Actually, she did a study, you know, back at West Point. She talked about grit was this passion and perseverance for long-term goals. And, you know, just when you tell the story, whether you realize it or not, you are the example of what we're trying to share with our team, you know, every day. You know, this challenge over comfort, this growth mindset, you know, triggering this interest, you know, that somebody needs to constantly fuel, you know, going through the reps and the focus, as you mentioned, hey, you know, come up with a plan, you know, surround yourself. And then you mentioned it several times about find this purpose. And your purpose may have thought it was intended to be one thing. It doesn't necessarily mean that's the only approach that you can have. And then, as you mentioned, you know, in the best words possible, you could fail, you know, you could fail several times, but as long as you continue to pick yourself up and keep moving forward, you know, that's all getting better because there's some life experience, as you mentioned, it's part of the journey.
Absolutely. People ask me all the time, how are you so mentally tough? Like, where did you get that from? I'm like, mental toughness is not easy. It's not like, yo, you just turn on the light and yeah, I got mental toughness now. Heck no, you got to put yourself through uncomfortable situations, challenges, being knocked down, training your brain to do something. And I say for the everyday people who don't get to go through, you know, Division I football training, or obviously you can relate to, you know, military training, the regular average person doesn't get to go through that. I try to tell them, look at things that you don't like to do, write them down. Try to do that 5 times in a week. If you don't like to, like, just easy things like, you get up every day, you don't like to make up your bed. Oh, I hate it. I'm just going to get back in it later. Do that for 5 straight days. Get up, do something you don't like. Make your bed. Oh, I got to make my bed. Do it. Hold yourself accountable to it. Then after that 5th day, it's just like, oh, it's kind of not like, all right, if I wake up now, I feel weird not making my bed. I got to do it. And then just every little things that you don't like to do, start trying to do them set the goal that you're not, I mean, that you want to do them for a certain amount of time. And then when you reach that goal, you're like, all right, I'm not going to do it anymore. It kind of feels weird. And you're just like, all right, you start doing things that you don't want to do. You start to build up a resilience in your brain and yourself to say, you know what? I can do these things. You know, this is just part of my life now. I feel weird now holding myself accountable to do this now. I got to do it. As I mentioned before, trained behavior becomes instinct.
Yeah, my dad used to tell me that bad habits are, it's hard to break, but good habits are even harder. And so as you walk through this, you know, this process, and I listen to the things that you're sharing with us, this is the same things that we try to instill, you know, with our new soldiers. They're coming from a different, you know, walk of life, maybe have a different set of values, maybe different life experiences. But when they come in here, we're trying to instill some type of structure. We're trying to instill, you know, the discipline, just the simple task of making your bed every day, you know, and building that habit so you know. But then, you know, as you walk through this, by doing those little, you know, those routine things routinely, by building this individual discipline, and as you mentioned, holding yourself accountable, and you don't realize, and then when you don't do it, something feels like it's off, right? You've had this routine. And as you mentioned, right, it's, you start to, you know, harness this resiliency, and you say, now I didn't work out today, and I kind of feel bad. Why am I off? It's because I didn't go to the gym.
That guiltiness of, damn, I didn't do that. And then you get yourself up, and when you're after, you get through that first, like, two or three times when you, like, actually went back to doing it when you didn't want to, it's just, you know what, I feel good about this. Yeah, I went to that gym today. I didn't want to go to the gym, but I did, and now look how I feel. That rewarding pleasure over after doing something that you don't want to do. You should always be able to, you know, push somebody through. And then when it comes to, you know, these training these young kids, I always try to tell people, you're going to have your culture. You're going to have what you stand for, what you believe in. You never stray away from that. But learning how to deal with each individual one and what ticks them and what gets them to go, that's what separates people. Because you can be a great leader. You can have your stance on what you're going to do, but sometimes this person needs to be pushed this way. That person needs to be pushed that way. It's taking the extra time sometimes to feel, okay, this person ticks when I do that. That person ticks when I do that. And that's how you really develop a strong team, knowing how you can work with each individual and knowing their strengths and weaknesses.
That's a great point. You know, for a lot of times, you know, our span of control is listed and highlighted with our teams as being 3 to 5. But every one of those individuals are all comprised on the same team, but they're all going to have different strengths and weaknesses. And just as you mentioned, you've got to find that way, you know, to trigger and fuel that passion, you know, and almost dial like a rheostat to find the things that are going to motivate them. Know when they walk in, they're going to have a bad day. So then you can get the most out of them. Because as you've mentioned, right, which I'm sure Coach Chiano did for you, I'm sure what your mom did for you, what your teammates, everything they saw in you, they were making sure that they set up the opportunity they could squeeze every amount of potential out of you.
See, I was what got me to tick is I don't like to be yelled at and called out in front of everybody for not doing my job. I always took a lot of responsibility in doing my job. And when I messed up and I got called out and yelled at it, you're pissed off, of course, that you messed up and you're getting yelled at. But I never blamed it on the coach that he was getting on me. But that next play, I'm taking somebody out. Like, I'm doing my job, but somebody's going to get this, like, the anger and this frustration. It's just how I would that day. And they knew that. My high school coach knew that very well. He used to tell my mom, I have to pick and choose the times I like to yell at him and call him out, because I know the next play, whatever his job is to do, that person's going to get laid out. So that's what ticks me. That I take so much responsibility and hold myself to a standard where when I disappointed the team or I messed up, I feel awful. But that next play, I got to get it all out, and then we're good to go.
Well, hey, Eric, I really appreciate you taking the time. You've shared some incredible stuff with us, you know, talk about, you know, this value set and what you were instilled in, some lessons that you learned from home, the importance of having somebody like Coach Chiano that kind of leads and shepherds you, and how you've seen that relationship grow and prosper, you know, over time. And then really, as you've gone through this crucible moment And as you are the example of all these different stages and become this individual with this driven purpose, and really, as you mentioned, you're really like the modern-day Superman that's carrying that torch from Christopher Reeve and really finding ways to really push people that have this incredible amount of capability and capacity. They just don't even know. They just need somebody that continues to believe in them, inspire them, and then challenges them every day to be better than they were before. You know, when we talk to, you know, those that are listening, we always leave with, what are your questions? But I like to leave the final word with you.
Well, I like to always say, I am who I am. What you see is what you get. I genuinely wake up happy with a smile on my face every day. I don't put on a front for anybody. This is what I am. This is who I am. My purpose is my purpose. I try to help people find their purposes and their values and realizing that we need to be appreciative for everything that we do have. Don't focus on the things that you don't have. And if it's something that you really want, then you work your butt off to get it. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And be the best that you can possibly be each and every day of your life. Because when you start adding up those days, watch where life will take you.
Well said. I really appreciate it, Eric. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Leadership Experience. If you like what you heard, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget to subscribe to keep up to date with the newest podcasts. The Leadership Experience will showcase professionals within five different subseries. Number one, Masters of Our Craft, The Essence of Warfighting. Number two, Students of Our Profession, as we understand organizational culture and concepts of leadership. Number three, Professional Athletes with Guns, as we talk hardships and maintaining a competitive advantage. Number four, Grit and Resiliency, the ability to overcome and perform under pressure. And number five, Safe and Secure Environment, as we talk soldier well-being and building trust within our organization and the profession as whole.